We will be moving into item number 15. This is the Willapa Bay Salmon Management Policy Review. This is a briefing and public hearing. And Chad, I will turn it over to you, sir.
Chair Smith, Director Unsworth, Deputy Director Storr, Commissioners, good morning. My name is Chad Herring. I'm here today to provide a briefing on the implementation of the Willapa Bay Salmon Management Policy in 2016. General outline of the topics I'll be discussing today. We will review some of the key policy elements, specifically enhanced conservation focus and a reduction in gear conflict. I will go over the 2016 fisheries planning process. I will report on the preliminary performance of the policy in 2016, as well as provide some information on recreational monitoring activities that took place in 2016, and we will wrap up by talking briefly about continued implementation in 2017. In 2016, we were in year two of a four-year Chinook rebuilding phase. This is the first phase of the policy, and in that phase, the guidance we received from the commission was to limit the harvest of nacelle and Willapa natural origin fall Chinook stocks to 20% harvest rate. As well, the department seeks to pursue alternative gears in order to provide additional marked selective fishery opportunities. This is important not only to be able to help us reach targets under the hatchery reform policy, but it becomes even more critical in 2017 as we move from an alternative gear set aside of 2% to that rate tripling to 6% in 2017. The department sought to reduce gear conflict issues centered around Chinook fisheries by not scheduling any commercial fisheries in the north end of the bay or commercial catch area 2T and 2U prior to September 16th, as well as not scheduling commercial fisheries in the south end of the bay or commercial catch areas 2M, 2N, 2P, and 2R until after Labor Day. As we began the 2016 fisheries planning process, we were faced with two constraining stocks, one being natural origin fall Chinook, as I referenced earlier with the 20% harvest rate limit on Willapa and nacelle stocks, and chum, due to their failure to reach spawner escapement objectives outlined in the policy. No commercial fisheries were scheduled between October 15th and October 31st, and we limited the harvest rate of all fisheries to 10%. We crafted the fisheries to comply with our key policy elements, and the department sought proposals for alternative gear use in 2016 from the commercial fishing sector. For the recreational fisheries in 2016, we do catch estimation through the catch record card system. That data is not available at this time, so all harvest rates, the calculations utilize estimated recreational harvest. Due to the dip-in nature of this fishery, can be very difficult to assess the actual impacts of these fisheries have. There is a need for additional monitoring. Right now we are covering a limited area in the marine environment, but there is no coverage for freshwater in order to be able to get unmarked encounter rates. We also have an issue of local and non-local stocks. We need additional data collection to be able to really tell us the impact or the contribution rates of local and non-local stocks to these fisheries. And with some of the enhancements we have made with freshwater recreational fisheries, we have seen an increase in landowner issues, mostly due to questionable sport ethics. For the commercial fishery, we began the season with planning to fish 50 openers. Due to a chum concern where we were accumulating impacts at a rate that exceeded what was predicted, we only 42 openers were actually fished. Our alternative gear set-asides, we plan to utilize tangle net throughout the duration of the season in Area 2U and in the first week of the season in the South Bay or Areas 2M, 2N, and 2R. Some kind of species-specific performance in 2016. I'll start with Chinook first. In 2016, we completed the baseline genetic analysis for Chinook in Willapa Bay. This analysis told us that there was no separation between hatchery and wild fish within Willapa Bay, as well as no detectable separation between subbasins within the bay. During spawning ground surveys, we were challenged with extremely high river flows. We had multiple freshets, so the uncertainty in that data might be a little bit amplified due to the conditions we experienced this year. And just kind of wrap all that up, we had a much lower than predicted natural origin return. For coho, our hatchery run size was much higher than predicted, almost double. And one of the emerging issues is in our carcass recoveries. Our origin composition of the naturally spawning population is calculated using the proportion of unmarked to marked fish that we recover on the spawning grounds. For coho, that number traditionally is less than 1% of the total spawning population. In 2016, it was less than 0.25%. As you'll see later, we have a spawning population, a naturally spawning population of over 30,000 fish. What this basically equates to is we recovered 76 carcasses. In comparison, our Chinook carcass recovery rates for spawning ground surveys are in the 5 to 6 percentile. So we've really got a problem with getting our hands on enough coho carcasses to accurately be able to proportion out origin. For chum, we had lots of chum in the bay. It was a banner year for chum. Chum were everywhere. And for the second year in a row, we were able to utilize our in-season run size update model that is centered around historical spawning ground information to point us, and it pointed us in the direction that we had more chum than we thought, and it worked for the second consecutive year. So that's good news. Now to talk a little more specifically about some of our stocks, I'll start with natural origin fall Chinook. We utilized four metrics to evaluate their performance: run size, spawner escapement, harvest rate of Willapa and nacelle stocks, and also the alternative gear harvest rate for Willapa and nacelle stocks. For run size preseason, we predicted a little over 3,000 fish. That came in at about 75% of what was predicted. For our spawner population, we have an objective of 4,353 fish. Pre-season, we plan to have 2,600 spawners on the natural origin spawners on the spawning grounds, and that number also came in lower than what we predicted at just shy of 1,600. We plan pre-season, our harvest rate objective, as I touched on earlier, is 20% for Willapa and nacelle natural origin Chinook stocks. Pre-season, we plan to fish at a 19.5 and a 19.4 rate, respectively. Those rates ended up being higher than what we anticipated at 25.1 for Willapa and 25 for nacelle. But to boil this down to what that really means, for Willapa fish, the difference between a 25.1 and a 20% harvest rate is 54 natural origin recruits, and for nacelle, it is 46 natural origin recruits. So we're walking, with abundances this small, we're walking a very fine line here to really be able to predict accurately what we are, and I think we do a pretty good job of that overall. For our alternative gear targets, you'll see the set aside for 2016 was 2%. You'll notice preseason, wow, we plan to fish much higher than 2%. The reason for that is the uncertainty with going from a gill net fishery to a tangle net fishery. There's some uncertainty about catch efficiency as well as effort. So we really tried to buffer those harvest rates this year to make sure that we hit those targets and to collect some additional data that can help us move forward. And you'll see that and we actually hit those targets at 2.7% for both Willapa and nacelle stocks. So for fall Chinook in hatchery fall Chinook, three metrics that we utilize: run size, total escapement, and our total harvest rate. Once again, our run size for fall Chinook hatchery stocks was 63% of what we predicted. We predicted a little over 36,000 fish. We ended up with just shy of 23,000. As a result, you can see the escapement was lower than what we predicted it would be during the season. But our harvest rate came in pretty close to what we planned to fish from what we planned to fish preseason to what actually happened. For Willapa Bay natural origin coho stocks, we utilized two metrics to evaluate the stock's performance: run size and spawner escapement. Our run size for 2016 predicted preseason was just north of 37,000 fish. Our preliminary run size estimate at this time is just north of 33,000 fish. We have a spawner escapement objective of 13,600. This is a WDFW goal. The PFMC goal that was established by the salmon technical team calls for 17,200 naturally spawning coho, not to be confused with 13,600 natural origin coho. Preseason, our planning process, we plan to have a little over 26,000 natural origin coho on the spawning grounds, and we ended up just a little shy of that, although still reaching both the PFMC and the WDFW goal for natural origin coho. For hatchery coho stocks in the bay, we utilize once again two metrics: run size and total escapement. You can see there that our run size of hatchery origin coho was much higher than what we predicted, and it led to an increase in total escapement both to the hatcheries and to the spawning grounds than what we predicted preseason. For fall chum stocks occurring in Willapa Bay, we utilize three metrics to evaluate: run size, spawner escapement, and harvest rate. Preseason, we predicted a run size of 47,000, a pretty strong run for Willapa Bay. We blew the doors off that. 86,000 fish or more is what we're estimating. I actually have an email from an employee of the Willapa National Wildlife Refuge who was forwarded on to me that said she'd been conducting surveys in areas down there that she'd never seen chum, and this year it was full of them. Literally, you could walk across the backs of chum in the bay this year. So as a very basic part of the food web in Willapa Bay, this is very encouraging, and hopefully we continue on this path. For our spawner escapement, our objective is 35,400. Preseason, we plan to have a spawner escapement of just shy of 43,000 fish. Once again, much higher than what was predicted, almost 81,000 fish on the spawning grounds. Our objective going into the season was a 10% or less harvest rate on all fisheries within Willapa Bay. We planned preseason to fish at a 9.9% rate. We actually fished at 6.6, so we met that objective as well. In terms of commercial landed catch, our Chinook catch was about less than half of what we predicted preseason, primarily due to the uncertainty around catch efficiencies and effort levels for tangle net fisheries that were prosecuted this year in Willapa Bay, as well as a lower than predicted run size. For coho, we harvested about 150% of what we predicted preseason, and we also had more harvest of chum than we predicted preseason. But remember, for both coho and chum stocks, we met management objectives for the 2016 year. Now I'll talk a little bit more specifically about spawning escapements within the bay. For Chinook, we have the six sub-basins there. I really don't want to go through every bit of information on here. I'll just touch briefly on a couple of the important points here. The North River Basin and the Willapa River Basin are our primary population designations within Willapa Bay for fall Chinook. And you'll see we did not reach our goal in the North River, 20% of goal, and the Willapa River, only 49% of goal. Also, the Nacelle River is our contributing stock for natural origin Chinook in the bay, and we only reached about 40% of our goal. Also, another interesting metric here to look at is PHAS in the Willapa and Nacelle systems. Our PHAS in the Willapa system was 81%. And our PHAS in the Nacelle system came in at 75, so much higher than the hatchery reform guidelines that those population designations would be. Hatchery reform tells us that we need to be at about 30% PHAS for those stocks. So we still got significant issues in that area. Also, just as a note, last year we saw a decrease in PHAS in both the Willapa and Nacelle systems. Those numbers have jumped right back up, leading me to believe that really what we saw last year was just effect of a much higher than expected pre-spawn mortality due to drought conditions in those systems. So for coho, once again, we reached our goal of 13.6. We were well above that. That coho data is still being collected and finalized right now. This figure is utilizing an in-season update model, which last year performed very well and would expect to put us right in the ballpark again this year. And we were at 183% of goal is what we're estimating at this time. And you can see there for chum, well above our spawner escapement objective at 220% of goal. I want to jump back just briefly to talk about natural origin Chinook spawner escapement. The plan and the policy is not to reach escapement next year or last year or even 5 years from now. This is a long-term policy where we had planned to reach escapement in years 16 and 21. You can see the blue bar there represents our natural origin escapement goal. We have only got two data points. And two data points a trend doesn't yet make. We've got a ways to go here, and I would expect that hopefully that graph is, the trend is going to point upward, but I expect we will have bumps and bruises along that road. We will have ups and downs. As I touched on briefly earlier, in 2015, pre-spawn mortality in all systems in Willapa Bay for Chinook due to drought conditions was fairly substantial. I just wanted to throw this in there as a comparison. In 2016, we saw a fraction of the pre-spawn mortality that we did in 2015. Granted, our effort in conducting these surveys was a little less than what we did in 2015, given the information as it was coming in, but I still think it gives you a relative good idea that those conditions did not persist, and what we saw last year was more an anomaly related to drought conditions than what we would typically see on any given year. Some surplus information from our hatcheries around Willapa Bay. For Chinook stocks, we surplused about 4,518 hatchery fish, over half of that coming out of Forks Creek, which was what we would expect to see given that we're still operating off returns of a release of 3.3 million smolts. We won't start to see the changes in hatchery Chinook abundance in the Willapa system or at the Forks Creek hatchery until we get to 2019 to really see the effect of the reduction in that hatchery program of 3.3 million to 350,000. So for the next year or two, I would expect to see a pretty decent number of surplus fish. For coho, we surplused a little 13,000 fish within the bay. I would expect a lot of this is just due to the run size came in so much bigger than what we expected, and those fish came back to the hatchery. And for chum, we surplused 20 chum out of Forks Creek and a little more excess of what we needed for broodstock management. So in terms of recreational monitoring in 2016, we utilized two different programs. We have a dockside creel sampling program that operated in Tokeland in South Bend from between August 1st and September 18th. We sampled 44 individual days between both sites. and that accounted for about 1,400 interviews and over 3,300 individual angler trips. We also utilized a volunteer trip reporting program. Those gave us data from a range of August 2nd through September 15th, and we got a pretty good return rate on that volunteer program. We handed out 360 forms. We got 73 return for a 20% rate. That's pretty good for a volunteer trip reporting program. A little bit lower than what it was last year, but still accounted for 168 individual angler trips. And just as a note, our creel sampling program, the days sampled, the number of interviews that we conducted, the number of individual angler trips that that represents was almost a 250% increase from what was done in 2015. Just some quick summary information on what data we collected during those recreational monitoring activities for Chinook. Between both the creel and the volunteer trip reporting program, we saw a harvest of about 700 hatchery origin or ad-clipped Chinook in the bay. We had three in the creel program and five retention of unmarked Chinook. And we saw a release of about 250 unmarked Chinook in that fishery. This equates to an encounter ratio of just over 0.3. So we also were able to collect some information on coho, although we're really not during the heart of the coho run timing. This program is really centered around gathering data on Chinook stocks, unmarked encounter ratios, and CWT collection. This creel monitoring nor the VTR program is set up to be a catch estimation. And we saw one release chum. So as we move forward into 2017 and considerations for policy, continued policy implementation will be faced with the same constraining stocks that we were in 2016, a 20% harvest rate limit on natural origin Willapa River and Nacelle River Chinook stocks, as well as a 10% harvest rate on chum stocks within the bay. We will be able to, due to the fact that we met escapement in 2 years consecutively, we have met escapement in 2015 and 2016, we will be able to schedule fisheries between October 15th and October 31st. But because we have not reached escapement in 3 out of 5 years, we will still have the 10% harvest limit. This would probably preclude us from scheduling fisheries during that time I mentioned earlier, just due to the amount of chum we would impact by fishing during that time. We will continue to explore alternative gear. We've had some preliminary conversations with a group that is interested in trying a floating pontoon fish trap within the bay. Personally, I'm very excited about this idea and look forward to exploring more and hopefully talking with you more about that idea as the situation develops. New tools for in-season updates worked well for coho and chum. Those in-season update models that we developed in 2016, we have two models, coho, one based around CPUE of the commercial fishery that we can kind of utilize in September and October, and another coho model that's based around spawning ground escapement. Both of those pointed us in the right direction this year, as well as the chum spawning ground model. We will continue to work on those. I think the utilization of both those has been a success in reaching adaptive management principles that are set forth in the policy. Due to the changes in fishery structure centered around Chinook harvest, we do not have an ISU for Chinook at this time. It is really imperative that that we be able to develop a model that can tell us either the strength or lack thereof of Chinook within season to apply those adaptive management principles to Chinook stocks. Given the change in the structure of the fishery and the prioritization to recreational fisheries, we really only have two data points of that recreational fishery to move forward. That's not enough to develop an in-season update model yet. We're going to have some patience and collect some more data over a couple of years and see what that tells us. In other areas, recreational either fishery success or failure has not correlated well with total abundance values. So that's also a challenge. And just kind of to wrap up, I want to talk briefly about the Wild Future Initiative. This is very important for Willapa Bay. We've got many funding requests tied to the success of this policy in the Wild Future Initiative. A robust assessment of the precision of our spawning ground methodologies and escapement goals, continued monitoring of our commercial fisheries, work to try and look at what it might take to get us to within hatchery reform guidelines. There are science division technical support in terms of biometrician support on some of our modeling exercises. All these are tied up in the Wild Future Initiative. So hopefully that comes through. So that's all I have at this time. I'm willing to take questions.
Thanks, Chad. Very informative, again. Yeah. Yep.
Looking at our distant spawner goal for Chinook, just trying to understand the impacts of the large number of hatchery fish in the system on that goal. Is harvest important, hatchery harvest important toward reaching that goal, or are we simply going to depend on lowering the number of hatchery fish that are, or does it have any impact on that goal?
Yes, I would say it does have significant impact on that goal. Within Willapa Bay, we do not have the infrastructure in place in the Willapa system, and I would say we have less than suitable infrastructure in the nacelle system for the department to be able to remove hatchery fish out of the system or stop them from spawning. Given that, harvest becomes a critical tool to reach those hatchery reform guidelines. We've got some time here, a couple of years, before we're out of the Chinook rebuilding phase. So we really need to work on alternative gears, any other ideas that we may be able to utilize and take a look at within Willapa Bay to remove these hatchery fish and stop them from what the literature would suggest is limiting our productivity.
Thank you.
No, go, you go, and then
you
I'll.
Go.
No, you go.
We'll go this side.
Back and forth.
Okay. Let's see, I have a number of questions, and one has to do with what we do with the hatchery fish. Now, I got an email last year, which I forwarded to staff, about there being rumors that department staff were out eliminating reds and wasting chum. And so let's talk a little bit about what happens to the fish that make it to the hatchery. And chum are used at lower elevation habitat and provide nutrient input. So what, refresh our memory again about what happens to the fish that reach the hatchery.
Well, fish that are in excess of broodstock management needs generally get surplus to the fish buyers. Some of them go to nutrient enhancement programs, but the majority go to surplus to the buyers.
Okay. So the nutrient enhancement effort, how do we determine how many of those fish we want to put back into the habitat to do that enhancement?
I think that's a question that's difficult to answer at this time. We're really at the beginning stages of evaluating a lot of this stuff, habitat, spawner escapements, those type of things. I would like to defer that until I really have some more information. I'm not sure at this point in time how I would get that figure.
Because I think that's always been a part of the equation is we had lots more fish in the habitat providing nutrients. That's where most of the nutrients came from. And I was in this email that I received, an accusation was made that the department doesn't understand the value of carcasses in the environment. And I think we do understand the nutrients that they bring.
Oh, yes. I would agree with your statement. Ocean-derived nutrients are a critical part of the health of the ecosystem. There are studies that suggest that you see the imprint of those ocean-derived nutrients up to 100 meters away from the streams themselves.
Which is not to say that the PHAS problem is not a real one. The genetic interference of hatchery fish is a real one. I've got a couple more, but I can wait till after.
Okay. Well, you're going to have to endure my questions. Thanks, Chad. First, I want to say that you did a great job, and I think your mentor, teacher, Steve Teasfeld, would be very happy to see you in your presentation today.
Thank you, Commissioner Coho. Coho.
Coho, Kehoe, whatever.
That's coming from a Harry.
Subliminal. So, we have Coho on the mic. I have a question about Coho.
Okay, good.
But actually, I have a question first. Let's start on the alternative gear set aside. And remind me, that was something that was put in the policy to kind of, is a kind of a motivation, I guess, for folks to come up with alternative gear ideas. And so, but my question is was that to, whatever that set aside, was that taken by the commercial fleet this year? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it was.
Tangle nets? Then?
Yes. In 2016, the set aside for alternative gear from commercial fishery impacts was 2%.
Okay.
We, while we had some interesting proposals that were sent to us, other than tangle net, we didn't really come across anything that it went to the spirit of what was in the Willow Bay Salmon Management Policy, both in terms of legality and release mortality rates that define alternative gear. So they were met using tangle net.
Okay, good.
Yes. We tried the same thing in 2015. We fished in just a very small area, and that we really ramped that up, the tangle net fishery this year.
So, and this other idea that you mentioned, the pontoon, the fish trap, is that what the Wild Fish Conservancy is? Is that their idea?
There's a group of commercial fishermen that we've met with and that I've been working with on this idea. It does stem from the Wild Fish Conservancy's Columbia River fish trap, although that is not a movable. It's a permanent structure with actual piers that are sent down.
Right.
This is a movable structure. It's just a floating pontoon. It can be the net leads can be anchored with pier blocks or just something heavy, and the trap itself will be anchored in place by 3 to 4 inch diameter steel spuds that can be driven down into the substrate and then pulled back up in order to move the trap or take it out.
Okay, so will there be a do we need an experimental permit for that, or what's the process?
We are in the very preliminary stages of talking about this. There will be some permitting issues that will have to be addressed. I think at this point in time, it would be we're way too early in the process to really start getting there. the amount to build this thing is going to be quite spendy. So, you know, we're continuing conversations at this point in time.
A couple more questions. So you mentioned the baseline genetic analysis that was done, which found no difference between natural spawners and hatchery fish. Was that a surprise, or was that...
No, it wasn't a surprise to me at all. These are integrated programs, so we do take natural origin fish into the brood stock. In a well-run integrated program, you would expect that there would be no genetic separation between those two. What we have at play also here, though, too, is a very high PHAS.
So when you
have a lot of hatchery fish on the spawning grounds as well, you can expect, you know, not a whole lot of separation. What did come as a little bit of surprise is the not having a detectable level of separation between sub-basin stocks. I guess part of that can be explained by some of our hatchery management practices, whereas if we're not able to collect brood at one certain facility, we backfill from another facility. And in the case of, let's say, the NEMA system, where we have a really hard time getting Chinook back to the hatchery in order to fulfill our 3.3 release target, you know, we backfill from other areas. There had been some thought in the that came out of the North of Falcon process that the North River was the only place where we really had our true wild Willapa Bay Chinook stocks left. The genetic data did not substantiate that.
So I'm just going to end with a comment thinking about my friend Dr. Mankin, who's served very well here on the commission, and I think he would probably agree with me that when you've got, without removal of these hatchery Chinook fish, if we continue to see these high PHAS levels, this baseline genetic analysis that we've seen, where we don't have any difference, will continue on. So I think, you know, we need to realize here that we've got competing objectives. Right now, with the emphasis, recreational priority on Chinook, unless we come up with some silver bullet to remove these hatchery fish, which, you know, I'm encouraged to hear about this development. As you say, it's spendy. It's going to be very difficult for us to achieve one of the main objectives, as I understand it, of this Willapa policy of developing a distinct natural spawning population. So I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, I was going to bring up the same thing because there has been a number of comments made in Pacific County about, well, why are we even worried about natural origin fish? The fish is a fish is a fish. And some have even accused me of being the one who made this grand decision to care about natural origin fish. And I can guarantee you, I don't have the power. If I did, yeah, I probably would still support protecting natural origin fish, making sure we have enough of them, because it just makes sense to me that we should be encouraging a certain amount of the runs to be adapted to the environment, suited to the environment. Evolution continues. Natural selection continues. This is all my opinion, but I'm not... I'm not the person who makes the decision about whether to care about natural origin fish. So can you explain a little bit about why it is that NOAA has tracked natural origin Chinook on the coast why they set, whether they care about whether it's being overfished? And they have declared natural origin Chinook on the coast to be in the state of overfishing now. So something to explain why we care about natural origin Chinook.
Noah, the overfishing definition was referring to coho. Is that correct?
No, it was Chinook on the coast. It was Chinook. I'm absolutely positive.
No, I know. I'm looking to Ron for some help.
Chair Smith, Commissioner Wecker, Ron Warren, Fish Program. The importance of natural origin Chinook is that I believe it was back in 98 that the Technical Review Committee looked at all of the natural spawning Chinook populations on the coast, and when they went by Willapa Bay, they opted to not analyze genetic information because of the high influence of hatchery genetics on the overall population. Regardless of all that, now that we have hatchery reform, we are closely paying attention, and the reason for that is that regardless of the genetic makeup and whether or not that fish is exactly the same as a hatchery origin fish or not, they would still look at the overall spawning population to determine ESA listing. And that if we can't prove that we're working towards a recovery and monitoring that, we are suspect to have an ESA-listed stock on the coast, and especially in Willapa Bay, and we do not want that. The aggression in which the agency has moved towards hatchery reform, especially in Willapa Bay, you heard the comment from the individual this morning that drove up in icing conditions and complaining about the hatchery production changes at Forks Creek Hatchery. I stepped out in the hall as he was leaving, and he shared more personal stories, which were touching. But the shock of 3.3 million versus 350,000 Chinook being reared in a primary setting, those are the tools. The AHA tool is what we're using to be able to determine that integration to be able to meet those hatchery reform standards. And if we don't do that, we're not showing NOAA that the importance of that. And I draw a reference to further describe that is that they're using those exact same standards or something very closely to have just taken us through a 24% reduction of Chinook in the Lower Columbia River. And because we can't control that hatchery origin influence onto the natural spawning populations, we've got to be able to gain control of it, or we're going to be looking at listings. I don't have a crystal ball of when or truly if that would happen, but I'm certainly urging us to continue to work on that to avoid that situation.
Did you mention about, I don't want this to be left hanging, about NOAA has declared overfishing to be occurring with respect to coastal Chinook, natural origin coastal Chinook in Willapa?
Yes, they have. Okay. And we will continue to monitor that and report back to council through that process. Thank you, Commissioner.
That helps. Thanks.
Good. Thank you. Well, we will go to the public input part of this, and we have a handful. And so Tim Hamilton and Francis, please.
Chairman and members of the commission, my name is Tim Hamilton. I'm Twin Harbors Fish Wildlife Advocacy, and I want to explain two things in our point of view. There is two ways you get to ESA. There's more than two, but two primarily ways. Put too many hatchery fish on the gravel or have too few natural spawners. So one of the things we've done in the past that causes all this trouble was to try to get exuberant about catching all those hatchery fish, and as we did, we drove our natural spawning stocks way down. In 2013, in a legal challenge from Ron and Art and I, we came to an agreement settlement with the department where we reopened this Willapa policy. And we spent 1,000 hours working on this. And one of the problems we had in the past was that we set a harvest rate of 30% on the nacelle. Then it went, if we fished at 35 to 40, 80 in the north. No matter what harvest rate we put, we always fished above the harvest rate because we set the goal at the start at 19.5. Anything happens and you lose it, with the exception of having twice as many fish come back. Okay. So when we went through the policy, our memory of these discussions was we had 14% to get us out in 16 years, maximum harvest rate on Chinook. There was this question about this hatchery fish that are still going to keep coming. So reluctantly, over our objections, the commission chose to adopt a 20%. Now, if you go back to slide 7, where Chad brought up the two declining points, I can tell you that I wish you would go back 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. You will see that going just like this. Okay? This is only from the time we started the policy. I do believe we exceeded the policy harvest rates in 2015. It looks apparent like we're going to get 25% this year. In 2016, I expect that to go as high as 30 by the time it gets done. Now, with these computers that I love so much, we have problems with data. We went through this last season where a lot of wrecks reported and came in and suggested shut down, reduce wreck fishing and reduce commercial fishing on Chinook. And the department said, can't do it, computer won't show us. Well, that gets frustrating. But the other part about this that you need to realize is that if you have a trend line like that, and you have data problems, and you realize if you set it at 20, you fish at 25. You set it at 30, you fish at 35. Well, what does that tell you? You just simply go from 20 to 15 and hope you don't exceed 20. This is not rocket scientist stuff. You cover for your known flaws and lack of value. And if I can have one more second, the policy contemplated this. And it said the protection for this argument is going to be if you go over 1 year, you take it back the next. And that's doing exactly what I'm saying. If you go over it 5 points, you know you're up high, you bring it back 5 points the following year. And that's in that policy, and we're hoping and expecting this department to honor this policy. Because if you don't, we are in the toilet. This Chinook is at maximum. We're nuclear.
Thanks, Tim.
I will agree 100%.
Norm?
With everything that man just said, I will reiterate just a few points. I'll get back to my prior comment about this how we cling so tightly to this maximum sustainable yield paradigm of conducting our fisheries. I can tell you, I've been a Willapa advisor since the body was put together, and I can corroborate that when we were shooting for a bay-wide goal of 30% harvest rate across the board, year after year, it came back 36 to 38%. Okay, now people say, "Well, it's 6 or 8%." No, it's not. It's 25% more. You're fishing 25% harder than you say you are because the models do not reflect the true fishing power that we put on the water, and we're still doing it today. So, you know, what was that? We were shooting for 20. We aimed for 19.9 in our preseason. Crafting of the seasons, we end up at 25. It's 5 of 20 is, we're still fishing 25% harder than we think we are. So something has to change in that model to reflect the true fishing power. And I said this for many, many years in Grays Harbor. We actually finally got that fixed in Grays Harbor. The model finally did catch up. I'll credit Master Scharf for making the tweaks in the model to make it more up to date, but it hasn't caught up in Willapa Bay. It really has not caught up. You know, The one thing we did in the Columbia when we had uncertainty like this is we came up with this concept of a buffer. Why can't we do the same thing here? Like Tim says, we're going to aim for 20, but let's put a 25% buffer on it. Let's aim for 15. And we'll probably end up where we want to be. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Francis. Bob Blake and Norm.
Yeah, Mr. Pogge's back. Yeah, the groupie's back. Okay, so I'm going to continue with what I was saying earlier with some caveats. First, I fish Willapa, and I fish it a lot. I enjoyed seeing the wreck monitoring down there. It's a program that needs to be maintained and expanded. I think it gives the department a valuable tool to educate themselves and the public as the true value of the impacts that are happening on the Willapa system. Two, I keep hearing the word failure. Well, I look at it in two ways. We have a failure that is connected to the harvest, the commercial harvest of salmon, or the harvest in general of salmon, and we have a failure that's associated with meeting conservation objectives. Historically, we have continually failed to meet the conservation objective, and we continue to see declines in our fish production. These fish are adaptable. We only have to look to some other countries that have taken fish from here to see them create healthy native runs that have become genetically adapted to their environment. So, to go back to the failure part, which one do we choose to subscribe to? I subscribe to that when we have a failure in conservation, we have a failure to the health of our species. When we fail the environment, ultimately, time will show, and it continues to show, it has shown, that as we fail the environment, as we fail our conservation objectives, humans suffer. So, these two policies, both the Grace Harbor and the Willapa, were designed to meet, hopefully, conservation objectives, which would enhance the survival of our native stocks, which would in turn create healthy environments to create more robust hatchery programs. If we're going to use adaptive management, we should use it in terms of how do we address our failure at conservation. Perhaps we've been too aggressive in our numbers. It's already been talked about. Perhaps we need to relook at those numbers. And again, as hard in the near term as it is for all fleets, we may need to tune those numbers back even more in order to meet the objectives that we need to. Otherwise, I do believe we will have a situation in Willapa that exists in Puget Sound, and that's ESA issues that become absolutely draconian in terms of harvest. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Norm. Greg McMillan, please. And Bob.
Well, good morning. My name is Bob Lake. I am actually the president of the Willapa Bay Gillnet Association and also the manager for the Willapa Bay Regional Fisheries Enhancement Group. First of all, I'd like to cover the genetic stock issue. There are Willapa mongrels. Those fish have come in from everywhere imaginable, from Oregon coast, Puget Sound, North Coast, I mean all over, and this is what they've adapted to. Genetic stock index, and most of the fish are from straying. We used to run RSIs, remote site incubators, for Chinook eggs back in the late 80s and early 90s. We had a good return out of those RSIs. But the whole problem is that we have now is on the update fishery, which was a good tool for predicting run size. This was done right around the 26th of August in Willapa for a 24-hour period, and they could update the run size or downgrade it without one catch record that we had. And we would harvest somewhere between 3,000 to 4,000, 4,500 fish. okay? This was a full fleet. That's when we had 383 licenses fishing. We're down to 150 now, and all those don't fish during that time. The other part of this thing is, it's really thrown a monkey wrench in the whole system, is with the Chinook priority for recreational. What you did, you took a valuable tool away, because when we should be fishing for the Chinook to remove the hatchery fish out, the mark fish, we need to be fishing August 1st through the end of August, because after that time, our impacts are lower. And you can ask Chad. Our impacts are lower during that fishery on the mark fish, or on the unmarked fish, after September, after Labor Day, then our impacts go up. So we was doomed to failure from the get-go. You guys got sold a bill of goods. And everybody says it was such a great policy. Well, I'm sorry, but it was not. It hurt the local economy drastically, big time. And I don't think that we need to keep belaboring the point, but on the other side of this whole thing, you want to really look at something. Check out on the recreational side between August 9th through September 22nd, what they did, 55% of the Chinook that was landed was local, 45% were not. Now, you're going to run into some real problem with Columbia River stocks, but there was also Umatilla, Stillaguamish, Deschutes, Washougal, Abernathy, in there. This is all data. This is all on there. So if you look at it that way, I think you need to sit back and look at what you're catching there. It's not just the one stock of Willapa fish. And we're going to be looking at some real drastic changes when PFMC gets going. So, like I say, I could go on for hours, but if you got a question, I'd surely take one.
We'd love to listen to you for hours.
You wouldn't even need my hearing aid, would you?
But you'd buy.
Just supply water.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. Lance Gray, please, and Greg.
I agree with what Bob said. If we're going to make this fishery, to take these PIAS numbers down, we have to fish in August. We have to get them out. That being said, you know, this policy has gone on. We've been in front of you for the last couple years here reviewing. Both years we've learned something new, that up to last year it was up to 40% of these fish that we didn't know don't even belong here. They don't belong in the Willapa system. They're from somewhere else. This year we've learned there's no genetic difference in the fish. So that being said, it seems like we put this policy was putting, you know, the cart before the horse. We came up with a policy, and now we're starting to get all the information that probably would have been helpful to put together a policy. I mean, that's what I learned in high school science projects. You get all your science together before you come up with a policy. I think that, you know, with all this new information coming out, I mean, you're putting a lot of hardship on local communities with your science project. You know, me being one of them, we live in these communities year-round. Okay, we don't come and fish for a week. We're there all the time. We live there. I don't see anybody at the boat ramps right now. You know, there's nobody here. We're supporting these communities, and you're putting a lot of hardship on the communities for your science project. I mean, from what I'm seeing right here, why doesn't the commission, if there's no genetic difference, why aren't we coming up with a dinosaur? You know, I mean, that's what I'm saying, is you guys are just throwing this stuff out with no science data. So, you know, now all this information comes in, I think we need to readjust the policy because of the new information. I mean, I think that's pretty easy, but I'm just a simple guy. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. And Lance, you have the last word for today.
That's good or bad. I'd like to address a timeline for fishing also. I think that the policy set out, we will not have a commercial fishery before this time. Instead of saying, let's look when we can extract hatchery fish out that we need to get out. We all agree we have to get these hatchery fish out. Without raising hatchery fish, you're not going to have a sport fishery. Everybody behind me wants a great sport fishery. Well, we stopped raising them in North River. That's where we got all of our fish from this year to backfill our hatchery problems. What do we do when that goes away? Nobody asks those questions. We ramped up the nacelle. That's 4 years away. What are we going to do to backfill these hatcheries with fish? I think you need to do some test fishing or look at past data or whatever to figure out when you should extract these fish out and not catch natural fish. Right now, and I don't know, you can call Chad back up here, but I don't understand. When we go fishing, and it looked no different than a sport fishery, we get a 10% natural catch rate. When those fish get to the hatchery, it's like 3 or 4%. I mean, if you look at the numbers, how many fish return back to the hatchery, and you look at how many naturals there were compared to hatchery fish, it isn't anywhere close to what we see in our fishery. I don't understand why that is. And maybe Chad can answer that. But I think we need to go back and look at when, instead of setting this is the date that works for us to extract hatchery fish, we need to see when the best time is to extract the most hatchery fish for the least amount of natural fish. I want to hit a little bit on the floating trap. I don't see anybody else behind me back here that has done it but me. I did it in the Columbia River, spent a lot of money. It was great for me. I made a lot of money. Great deal. I did it in exactly the same place that I seined. I caught 400 to 500 salmon a day seining. We couldn't catch 2 salmon a day with a floating trap. It was terrible. What salmon we caught, the seals came in and ate them as fast as we caught them. They were on the dock literally 3 feet away from us. Nothing we could do. We couldn't shoot them. We couldn't scare them. They ate every fish that went in that trap. You were going to spend a ton of money, which I don't know that the state has, to do another experiment that you think, oh, because we put alternative gears up there, to do, to learn what we've already done. It does not work. Okay? We fished on a 1.2 million fish run. Salmon. We fished on a 700,000 fish silver run. Could not make it work. Okay? You are wasting money doing it. I'm just telling you that. You're going to come back here 2-3 years from now and go, wow, that didn't work. We spent a lot of money to learn what we've already learned in the Columbia River. It does not work. I'd also like to touch on the chum run return this year. If you recall, 4 years ago, maybe people have sat up here and screamed about the commercial fishery took way too many chums 4 years ago, 3 years ago, whatever it was that this return came from. This return came from a year that we did not make escapement. We were short of escapement. I think we need to go back in this policy, like we said, and look at our numbers that we've set for escapement goals. We have this huge return off of not hardly any fish coming back, and we all complained about it. I don't know if any of you gone up. I went up the river that I live next to. For 2 weeks straight, there was 50 fish spawning in a spot as big as this table, over and over and over. It was great. We got great nutrients. But they absolutely wiped each other out. Every 3 days, they came, dug the reds up again, and spawned again. It just went on over and over. There's no reason for that.
Thanks, Lance. You did a good job for the last word. So I think everybody, your points were all very well made, and I think beneficial to at least us up here, and I know the staff will take them to heart. This is how we learn, hopefully continuous improvement. That'll bring to an end item.